report.
Senate Committee on Veterans Emergency Preparedness will come to order. Madam Vice Chair.
Senator Boakwith, I'm not sure how you feel about soldiers going AWOL. And Senator Manning out there in the audience, Cameron, I don't know how you feel about people going on AWOL, but I was, you know, I like finding out different things. And I'll first, this is a little vignette that a soldier wrote. He said, "While I was stationed in Sasebo, Japan, on the USS Blue Wood, I went AWOL and flew home to see my girlfriend. I was gone for 9 days, missed ship's movement twice, and had to catch up with it in Singapore. I went to XOI, don't know what that is, Executive Officer's Inquiry, I guess, and he only gave me extra duty for 30 days. Because while I was gone, my wife and I got married. And that will be 19 years ago, January 2nd. And the reason this caught my eye was my father went AWOL. For 4 days, he was in the Navy. He was stationed in Sandpoint, Idaho. He went to Portland, Oregon, married my mother, got back to Sandpoint, Idaho, and my father is the most honest person. He has a great worth ethic, and he only missed 1 day in his whole teaching career, his 32-year teaching career, and that was for his father's funeral. So he went AWOL, and he got married. He went back. The other officers covered for him. So maybe you know that some of this sometimes go on, but they were married for over 60-some years. My mother died in 2004. My father died in 2008. But I just had never thought about AWOL until I read this little story, and I just don't want you to be offended that there are some people out there that go AWOL, but all for the right reasons. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair. We're going to open a very brief work session for bill introduction. So, Senator Olson, move your posterior back up here, if you would, please. We're opening a work session for introduction of measures. Madam Vice Chair, if you would.
Senator Boakwith, I move that the following legislative concept be introduced as a committee bill, LC 4217, dated 3/3/17.
Representative Montes Anderson's Vice Chair moves the legislation be introduced as committee bills LC 4217 dated 3/3/17. Colleagues, this is simply a placeholder with a relating clause for veterans for later activities. Pretty simple introduction. Any discussion? Any opposition? Seeing none, so moved. With that, we're going to close the work session for the introduction of bills, and we're going to actually open a public hearing first on SB 796, because Senator Manning was here waiting before Senator Olson. You would please, Senator, Council, if you'd tee us up so the good senator can lead off here.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 796 creates parking permits for individuals with service-connected disabilities of at least 50% with Oregon Wounded Warrior designation and allows such individuals to park in time-limited public spaces or meters without penalty or payment. It directs the Oregon Department of Transportation to implement as specified, becomes operative January 1st, 2018, declares an emergency, takes effect on passage. The measure has a dash one amendment that conforms the language concerning service and the type of discharge for conformity and consistency with existing law, and there's no subsequent referral.
You're on.
Chair Boakwith, Vice Chair Montes Anderson, Senator Courtney. I really do appreciate this. My name is James Ivory Manning, Jr. I am the senator from Senate District 7, which is Eugene and Junction City. I am really thrilled and honored to be here before you at this time. Thank you for your service, and thank you for your leadership. And at this time, I would also like to recognize the veterans that are sitting out in the audience, and to the Vietnam veterans that are returning back, are here, long overdue. Welcome home. This bill, Senate Bill 796, is a, in my opinion, a real no-brainer. It gives us a little bit more respect to for the services that our military has provided throughout the years. We currently, on record, Oregon has 33,839 military veterans. Looks like that number is going to increase as the time goes by. I'm not quite sure about how the conflicts and stuff that are looming before us will affect these veterans. But what this bill provides is a little remedy for those veterans that have a honorable discharge with a service-connected disability of 50% or higher. Now, one of the things that, to just to clarify a few myths, because a veteran has a service-connected disability of 50%, doesn't necessarily qualify them to get a military disabled placard in this case. This bill is particularly looking at disabled veterans. We have amputees that are out there as a result of combat issues. And then we also have a aging military veterans forces. Recently, I attended my VFW in Eugene Post 293, and I looked around, and there are a lot of veterans that are pretty much getting up in age, and they require a little assistance, but they're still carrying the flag forward. As we age, some of us, not all, but we require a little bit more assistance and stuff in getting around. This bill will provide just a little bit more help and recognize those veterans by providing them with an opportunity to park anywhere where public parking is permitted at no cost. Not all 33,000 veterans that we have here, 33,000 plus veterans, will qualify for this, and neither will a lot of veterans that are already wounded warriors will even attempt to apply for this. But it is an option. It's one thing that our way to recognize their service and our sacrifices. So without going into a lot of other detail about this program, what it won't do is that it won't cause a big hardship on a lot of people. I did have DMV come by and ask me, what would that look like in terms of dollars and cents? The process is simple. Any veteran that requires a handicap parking placard will go through the same process, meaning that they will go through a doctor, will do the evaluation and the forms that they're required for any particular parking placard. They will fill that out, plus they will have verification through the VA of their service-connected disabilities. Our veterans are dispersed throughout Oregon, and you were provided earlier with a chart to kind of give you a location of where our veterans are. I strongly, humbly ask that you give an aye vote to Senate Bill 796. It's just a little small, say, gratitude for our veterans and our aging veterans that it's going to need a little bit more assistance. Thank you so much for this opportunity.
Thank you, sir.
Mr. Chair, Madam Vice Chair, members of the committee, or single member of the committee, the other ones are down here. My name is Alan Olson. I represent Senate District 20, which is the heart of Clackamas County. As you all know, as officers, it's we the enlisted that get all the work done. And when Sergeant Major Manning came to me and said he had a great bill, and I read it and I looked at it and I said, absolutely, I will support that. As a veteran myself, I understand what we, even officers, have to sacrifice in the military. You saw a presentation that I gave here maybe a week ago, and you saw the conflicts that we fought in. And it goes back to World War II and on through Grenada, and the little conflicts nobody's ever heard of, but we know of Vietnam, and the Persian Gulf War, Afghanistan, the Iraq War. We know that our veterans sacrifice for America. And this is a small token of our appreciation for those people that have been wounded and suffered through casualties of the war, of the battle that they had to be in, to allow them to have an easier time to park. You would know that if you just went out here and tried to park around the Capitol, how difficult it is. And I think this is an exceptional bill. I thank the Sergeant Major for bringing it forward. And I would ask that you would vote yes on this bill to show that you understand what veterans do and what they sacrifice for our country. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, just for the record, I have a capital parking bill that would take the parking away from the city of Salem and turn it over to legislative administration so we could fix that and citizens could get here. But that's in a different bill. Madam Vice Chair?
So this would allow them to park anywhere. I mean, not just disabled parking, but say the metered parking.
Chair Boquist, Vice Chair Montes Anderson, absolutely. What it will provide for is that anywhere parking is permissible. And one of the benefits of this bill is that not all the time is the handicapped parking location the most convenient place for a veteran to park. So it would allow them to park at parking meters, and it wouldn't incur a great cost to any city. Again, there's 33,000 plus veterans dispersed throughout Oregon. I do know that are familiar with Portland has a whether or not you are handicapped or not, you know, you are handicapped, then there's a cost for you to park. I think Salem has moved it in the same direction, and there's talk about other areas, venues, because people are cities and counties are trying to get money. I think that it would be wrong for us to pursue and take more money from veterans that have already given so much, and it wouldn't cost that much. I mean, you know, at most, your veterans will be able to park anywhere. This is in public parking, though. It does not include private venues.
Thank you.
Ms. Joyce, you want to join us, please? Now we get to see. I'm just curious, Senator, did you tell him, look, Sergeant, he's got to come up here and do this with you? Sergeant Major E9 said, Sergeant E5, you got to go do this. I'm just checking how this
works. Absolutely.
Ms. Joyce, I'll let you do your testimony, and I'd let you sit next to, you know, the good senator here, and then we can figure out how this might work.
Chair Boquist and members of the committee, Amy Joyce from the Department of Transportation, and I'm honored to sit at the table with the two good senators. I met with Senator Manning last week to discuss the bill. I submitted a piece of written testimony, and Cheyenne and others have done a great job describing what the placard would be and the benefits, the parking benefits it would provide. Usually I don't talk about how DMV would implement a bill. It either passes or it doesn't, and then DMV implements it.
We're
that
asking
sort of
you
thing.
To, so you can go ahead.
Right. So we looked into two different ways to potentially implement this bill, and the reason we did that is because the standard way we would implement a bill like this is pretty expensive, and we know what happens with bills like that. So the standard way we would implement this bill would be to create a new kind of parking permit type in the computer system, so that when an individual qualified for this and was issued that kind of parking privilege, it could be put on their driver record. The benefit to that is it counteracts fraud. The disabled parking permit privileges in the state have been changed over time, largely on arguments of concerns about fraud. We used to do license plates that gave the privilege. Mm-hmm. In 1989, that changed to placards, specifically at the insistence of folks who were disabled and exercised this privilege and their concerns about fraud. So we're always concerned about this area of law. So the benefit to putting it in the record is it counteracts fraud. The drawback is it's quite expensive, and it's not a highway fund eligible expense. So we know what that means. So a different way to do this would be to say that we could issue a placard, and it would go in the system as a standard disabled person parking placard, but something different on the placard would be checked, or a sticker would go on it, something like that, to give it that elevated stature of honoring the veteran, the wounded warrior, as well as the additional parking privilege. Drawback, less able to detect fraud. Benefit, costs very little. So we look to the guidance of this body for the direction to go, and we stand ready to implement if and when the bill passes.
And your reaction?
Thank you, Chair Boquist. I think that, and again, we did have the conversation, and you know, certainly we don't want to cause any additional costs. So the process itself would be the standard process where the veteran would go and receive a doctor's requirement as filling out the form, mm-hmm. just like anyone else. But that would be, and then the VA would provide the actual documentation giving the actual service connection percentage of disability. So that in itself would be something that is a little different. I know that now when I renewed my driver's license, I took some documentation down there. Now my driver's license had veteran on there. So I'm thinking that this is not going to be a big thing. You know, perhaps there's some kind of, some kind of special marking, perhaps even a color. code for the placard might be just as if. I don't foresee millions of these placards being made because there are just not that many veterans. So,
it's like 33,000.
At this point, there's not that many veterans. So I think it's something that's very doable. I think that it wouldn't cost a lot. And I think that our veterans deserve it.
Ms. Joyce, is written, is the bill, can you accomplish what you described in the bill as written, or do we need some amendments, or are you going to need further guidance?
Chair Boquist, I don't believe we need any amendments. I did not see the dash one, so I want to look at that, but I think as written, we could implement it either way we describe.
Right. So I would ask you before the next work session to, you know, look at the dash ones, get back with council to make sure if there's any changes or other discussions that need to be had, make sure you get Senator Manning and Senator Massa that so that we can, you know, have those discussions before potentially proceeding.
Very good.
Any other questions, Mr. Courtney? Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Joyce. We have one more person signed up to testify, which is Charles Richards.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Thank you, sir.
Chair Blomquist, Moy Anderson, Vice Chair, I want to say that I'm very proud to be here. I live at this building. I've been on five different commissions in the last 8 years, so I spend a lot of time here. But first of all, I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for the VA. The VA saved my life. When I got back from Vietnam, they said I had 6 months to live and go home and have a good time. And just shortly after that, I got a phone call and was sent to California to get a heart valve transplant. And it was here I am. So it's been a long time ago. I was a member of the United States Navy serving in the Tonkin Gulf for 13 months. And I had a lot of 5-inch gunfire. If you've ever been around a 5-inch gun, it's a pretty noisy thing. I lost some hearing, so I got my very first VA check was $12. And it's a little more than that now because recently I found out that I was part of the Agent Orange situation, and that was it. But one thing, I am a member of the board for Northwest Senior Services, and I deal with people with disabilities and people who are seniors. And I have found that the veterans are an untapped resource for the state of Oregon. These men, I was very fortunate. I was able to retire at 62 years old. And when I retired, I started coming into this building, and I've been coming here ever since because I find it very interesting, and the work you do here is not easy. I'm glad I'm just there on the sidelines. But the big thing is the men who we would get these veterans, and I was glad to hear the chair discuss this situation with the parking around the building, because if you are a person like me who spends a lot of time here, if you pay that meter every day, it's about $17 a day. And if you are retired, that kind of money is a little tough to come by. So what I want for my brothers in arms, I think this would be a wonderful way to celebrate. And I probably won't even qualify for it because I've been real lucky. I'm pretty able to get around. But there are a lot of people that come to this building that would be the kind of service that would make it so they could attend things that they really want to be here for. And I want to thank you, and I want to thank the VA. The VA gets a lot of bad raps in this building, but I have to tell you, for all these years since 1969, they've been really great for me. And I thank you very much for listening to me. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Anyone have a question?
Nope. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, colleagues, we'll close the public hearing on SB 796. And just for a refresher, everybody that's out there, because I know Senator Manning's sitting back in there, the way the Veterans Committee has worked traditionally is we hear a bill 1 week, and then we'll put it on for a work session the following, because we want to ensure those veterans that can't make it here can send in their email testimony, and other people can send in testimony that we can put into the record. And so we generally carry all of our bills forward 1 week to ensure we get the most input that's out there. And again, on any bill that's out there,
would encourage members of the public, even though you're seeing us here in a public hearing for a series of bills, if you have a comment on a bill or you have something put into the record, you can go to OLIS, the online, the Oregon Legislative Information System. You can Google that and then submit testimony for any bill. So we'll carry that bill forward then. Colleagues, we're going to open a public hearing on SB 61. Council, if you would, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 61 adds 10 new designees to the list of those required to coordinate emergency preparedness and response with the Office of Emergency Management. There's no subsequent referral, and I believe Mr. Phelps is here.
Thank you very much.
I don't want to steal your thunder, but I can guess why.
There's no surprises in this building. Chair Boquist, Vice Chair Monis Anderson, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak this afternoon. I'm Andrew Phelps, Director of the Oregon Office of Emergency Management. I'm here today to provide our full support and testimony for Senate Bill 61. This bill and the subsequent amendment to ORS 401.054 would add 9 executive agencies and the Office of the Secretary of State to the list of emergency management liaison agencies that comprise the Oregon Emergency Response System, or ORS, and the ORS Council. Each of these agencies either has an emergency support function or ESF lead or support agency role and provides ancillary support like the Department of Public Safety standards and training. In addition to the inclusion in the ORS Council, should Senate Bill 61 be signed into law, each of these agencies would be included in the Governor's Disaster Cabinet. The Governor's Disaster Cabinet, or GDC, was created by Executive Order 1607 in March of last year and serves as an advisory body to the Governor during disasters for policy direction, resource coordination, and recovery efforts. Each of these proposed additions to ORS 401.054 already engage with the Office of Emergency Management in statewide emergency preparedness, response, mitigation, and recovery issues. Senate Bill 61 will strengthen those partnerships and ensure these agencies have a proverbial seat at the table, and not just when Oregon is having a bad day, but also while we plan, train, and exercise to ensure that Oregon is ready for whatever bad day lies ahead. One of the many takeaways from last summer's Cascadia Rising After Action exercise was that in a disaster, every local, tribal, and state agency truly becomes an emergency management agency. The effort to include these agencies that are listed in Senate Bill 61 will allow us to more adequately plan for and prepare for a disaster of that magnitude. Of course, adding these agencies is not a panacea. It is, however, a positive step towards developing the robust, detailed, and comprehensive plans we need to leverage the more of what the state government can do to prepare for, mitigate against, respond to, and recover from any emergency or disaster, regardless of cause. Thank you for allowing me the opportunity to speak in support of Senate Bill 61, and that does conclude my prepared remarks.
Thank you. Questions?
Just, I forgot my computer, and so I don't have the bill in front of me. Can you just state which agencies are listed?
Sure. The agencies that would be added that are not already part of the ORS Council, Oregon Emergency Response System, would be the Department of Education, Department of Public Safety Standards and Training, Department of State Lands, Veterans Affairs, Employment Department, Housing and Community Services, Business Development, Military Department, Tourism, and also the Secretary of State's Office.
Have we forgot anybody yet?
I think that just about covers it, sir.
Well, yeah, it's hard to say. Well, my observation is now that we've gotten serious about emergency planning, and especially during the last Cascadia exercise, which, you know, was enlightening to members of the executive branch, we'll just put it that way, people have suddenly decided they should start preparing. And, you know, and then there are also some people that you have to issue the invitation to because, you know, they're just lost souls in the woods. I would just make mention to make sure, you know, you go back and so that we don't miss anything, so because we'll carry the bill forward if there's no stuff. I think I have some other questions that I'll raise with you independently at this in regards to the bill, but other than that, questions, Mr. President? Anybody else? Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
That will close the public hearing on SB 61 and open a public hearing on SB 62. Must be a department bill because they're sequential. I see that now. 61, 62.
Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, Senate Bill 62 modifies and expands intrastate mutual assistance compacts used by local governments to include state and tribal governments. It renames them Oregon Resource Coordination Assistant Agreements, requires state government participation, permits tribal governments to opt in and local governments to opt out via a resolution or ordinance, directs the Office of Emergency Management to develop procedures and guidelines for implementation. This also has no subsequent referral.
I thought we expanded to tribal entities, but go on here.
Chair Boquist, Vice Chair Melissa Anderson, members of the committee. I've already introduced myself. I don't think I need to do that again. But just in case, I'm Andrew Phelps, Director of the Oregon Office of Emergency Management, and here today to provide testimony in support of Senate Bill 62. Mutual aid, as most of you know, is a cornerstone of emergency management and disaster response, effective emergency management and disaster response. It occurs every day throughout the state on dozens of incidents, large and small. In my 2 years as the Director of the Oregon Office of Emergency Management, I have seen time and time again the willingness of Oregon's public safety agencies across all levels of government respond to the call of help from their neighbors. There have also been times, however, when atypical disaster assistance was needed or a resource was acquired from a jurisdiction on the other side of the state, and there were no mutual aid agreements to facilitate or expedite that resource to be shared where it could be most useful. Senate Bill 62, which more closely aligns mutual aid in Oregon with the model intrastate legislation guidance put forward by the National Emergency Management Association and used successfully across the country, would offer a few yet significant changes to ORS 402.200 and improve the way intrastate mutual aid works in the state of Oregon. Most significantly, Senate Bill 62 automatically includes all state agencies and all local government entities into the interstate mutual aid agreement called the Oregon Resource Coordination Assistance Agreement. This bill will provide the opportunity for tribal jurisdictions to opt into the agreement. This is a significant change. Senate Bill 61 also directs the Oregon Office of Emergency Management to develop guidelines and procedures for requesting and providing assistance and any other guidelines or procedures necessary to implement the agreement referenced in Senate Bill 62. If passed and signed into law, the Office of Emergency Management will work collaboratively with local, state, and tribal stakeholders to mirror the processes currently used for interstate mutual aid via the Emergency Management Assistance Compact. During fire season, we've gotten really good at moving resources around this state. Perhaps we've had, in some ways, too much practice. Locally, mutual aid agreements are effective and efficient at moving resources from one jurisdiction to another, typically neighboring jurisdictions. In 2004, the local emergency management community began an effort to develop the Intercounty Omnibus Mutual Aid Agreement, which is closely aligned already to what's in ORS 402.200, the current interstate mutual aid statute. What would be added or after 12 years of this effort since 2004, only half of Oregon's counties have signed on to that statewide omnibus mutual aid agreement. This change to current statute will include every city, county, state agency, and hopefully our tribal partners, while not superseding any existing mutual aid agreement or future mutual aid agreements that may be developed. While Senate Bill 62 will give us the ability to move unique resources not covered by mutual aid, this eliminates what we see very often when atypical resources are needed, which is on-the-fly handshake agreements to get resources from one part of the state to another. For example, as wildfires devastated Canyon City and burned towards John Day in Grant County back in 2015, the county realized they were missing a very vital resource, and that was an emergency manager. This is not a resource that is typically shared from county to county, but we were able to work with our county emergency managers in Yamhill County, Clackamas County, and Deschutes County to move county-level emergency managers into Grant County to assist that county with the secondary and tertiary impacts of that disaster, donations and resource and volunteer management, sheltering and notifications. That agreement, though, was done on the fly and without the formal agreements or processes that would make me sleep a little bit better at night when we're moving those types of resources around the state. A couple of months later, my office coordinated the assistance of public information officers to support the stunned city of Roseburg following the attack at Umpqua Community College. Again, this was done without formal agreements and processes. 3 months after that, the Public Safety Answering Point, or PSAP, the 911 center in Burns, Oregon, became pretty overwhelmed with 911 calls, certainly an increased call volume as a result of the occupation that was happening at the Malheur Wildlife Refuge. We don't typically move 911 dispatchers from one PSAP to another, but that was a resource they needed. The 911 community, as they always do, rushed in to help, but again, no formal processes or agreements. Oregonians find a way. That's my takeaway, I think, when we see these types of resource sharing initiatives. We help our neighbors, and Senate Bill 62 will provide a framework to formalize that help and provide some degree of peace of mind to those requesting and those providing mutual aid assistance here in Oregon. Thank you again for the opportunity to speak in support of Senate Bill 62, and this concludes my prepared remarks.
Thank you. Couple questions or observations. That we're adding tribal entities late in the game, I thought we did it once before, but it's obviously a good thing. But really what we're talking about here is the importance of these documents is it relies for resource planning. So instead of on the fly, you got to go find somebody, you know there's a mutual aid agreement, and you know this is the sorts of things you can do it. So instead of grabbing someone here and grabbing someone there and sending them that direction, you have a plan in which you can exercise when you have a formal agreement beforehand. Am I missing something, or is that right?
Chair Boquist, members of the committee, you hit the nail on the head. When we move these resources, again, I think folks do it in good faith, but I'm always crossing my fingers that nobody twists an ankle.
Right. Thank you. Madam Vice Chair. Senator Olson.
Yes, sir.
Senator Courtney. Thank you very much. Is there anyone else that wants to testify on SB 62? If not, we'll close the public hearing on SB 62, and we'll open a public hearing on SB 80. It still looks like a governor's bill. It's a low number.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 80 recognizes the service of Native American veterans, requires the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs to assist with programs overseen by tribes and U.S. government accreditation of tribal veterans representatives. It has no subsequent referral.
Director, I see you're here, and Mr. Bob.
Chair Boquist, committee, thank you for having me. My name is Steve Bob Sr. I'm with the Confederated Tribes of Grand Round. I'm a Marine Corps Vietnam veteran. I'm a full-blooded Grand Round Indian, and I'm here today to speak not only in support of this bill, but the ongoing participation of Native Americans in the armed forces. Native Americans tend to be welcoming, tend to be generous. It's part of our culture to give back the wealth when we're able to, but we're also fiercely protective of this nation and its boundaries and those who would threaten this nation. I've been asked on many occasions.
You push the mic my way just a little bit because you're a little bit too close.
Oh, okay.
We're getting feedback. There you go.
I've been asked on many occasions of why do Native Americans continue to step up to volunteer to serve in armed forces of this nation, a nation that was taken from them. And it's a very easy answer because we are descendants of warriors. The fighting blood of our ancestors races through our veins, and we would never sit by and watch and let somebody else defend this nation against those who would threaten. So Native Americans continue to step up with the participation of the Code Talkers World War II, Ira Hayes with the raising of the flag on Iwo Jima, Mount Suribachi, and ironically, the first woman killed in combat was Native American, also of the Navajo tribe. So Native Americans continue to step forward to defend this nation because we wouldn't allow those who would threaten this nation or these people of this nation and those who come here to take care of their families, to help their families, and to pursue the dreams that we all have. So we would continue to do so, and if the battle cry came out today, old war ponies like myself would step forward, not blink or not hesitate, to stand side by side by our brave men and women to defend this nation today. I want to tell you that occasionally I've had the honor to present the flag to the family of a fallen warrior or a warrior who has passed. And I can tell you when I turned to give that flag to that family of the United States of America on behalf of the President of the United States and on behalf of a grateful nation, and you turned to give that flag to that family, to that mom, to the kids, to the dad, or to the wife, and they start to cry. excuse me. Again, from a nation that was taken from them, but will fight to the death to defend it. You will feel the weight and the impact when you give that flag of the United States of America to that family. So Native Americans will always come forward, will never stop, and will defend this nation regardless. So thank you for letting me have this time, for your consideration, and for your recognition. On behalf of the Confederated Tribes of Grand Round and the warriors of the Confederated Tribes of Grand Round, the warriors of the state of Oregon from the nine tribes, thank you for your consideration and your recognition. That's all I have. Thanks.
Thank you. Director?
Good afternoon. Chair Boquist, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Cameron Smith, the director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs, and proud to be sitting here side by side with a fellow member of my tribe, the Marine Corps, Mr. Steve Bob.
I didn't know this was coming.
And we have, and this is an ODVA bill introduced by the governor's office on the agency's behalf, and we are in full support and have long been doing outreach and training with our tribal veteran representatives across the nine tribes. We have long had in our statutes going back to 1945 that clear aid and assistance of county veteran service officers and of national service organizations, and we think this corrects the record and adds our tribal partners. As Steve mentioned, our tribal veterans have served at a higher level per capita than any other group and have never hesitated to stand up to defend what is that shared homeland, even despite a very difficult and challenging relationship with the federal government over the years in our tribes. The tribal veteran representatives have recently been advocating at the national level to have that government-to-government relationship from the sovereign nations back to the federal VA, specifically on whether there could be a power of attorney and direct claim submission back to the federal VA. There's been some flexibility out of the federal VA and their Office of General Counsel to try to create that pathway for tribal nations to submit directly. Still a lot of hurdles in terms of some of those requirements that they would have to meet, but embedding this in our statute makes sure that should any tribe ever want to come under ODVA's power of attorney, and however we can be of assistance going forward to our tribal veterans, that we would have that clear statutory authority. And I'm happy to take any questions.
Yes, ma'am.
How many Native Americans do we have in Oregon that are veterans?
Chair Boquist, Senator Montes Anderson, I believe it's about 5,000 tribal veterans, mm-hmm. And I want to say 100,000 total tribal citizens across Oregon, mm-hmm. I believe are the numbers.
There are also questions. Senator Corey? I do have one question. With the passage of SB 80, does that also mean that you would be able to work with them to train Native American VSOs?
Chair,
I see 5,000. If there's 5,000 Native American veterans, if it's anything common to our rest of our numbering system, probably at least a third of those are eligible for federal veterans benefits, and probably a large section of them don't get those benefits.
So, Chair Boquist, members of the committee, today there hasn't been that clear pathway for tribal nations to have a power of attorney separate and distinct to their own organization, similar to what ODVA has and that the counties submit under, or similar to the national service organizations. We would certainly welcome any tribal government that wanted to have. So today the training has focused more on what are the avenues, but not submitting the direct claim. So doing more of that outreach and education, whether on the federal VA benefits, the tribal benefits, the community resources. We would certainly welcome them. We have been doing specific training. We would welcome them to be fully submitting under our power of attorney, but it treats the tribal nations like we do our counties,
right.
And it's that tension still that they're navigating to try to get the direct government-to-government back to the federal VA.
But SB 80 would allow us to do that.
Correct.
Right.
It would give clear authority. I mean, we would do it today, but it would give that clear guidance.
Right, because I would assume probably all 100,000 Native Americans voted for the lottery, so because they participate at a higher rate than the rest of us do, too.
So. And Chair Boquist, members of the committee, the county VSOs have been great partners in bringing on the Polk County Veteran Service Officer. They'll be doing outreach at the tribal nations, specifically to Grand Ronde for Polk. And it's just another, there are more irons in the fire. Sometimes a tribal veteran will reach out to a tribal veteran rep before they ever do, just given some of the distrust in the federal VA or other partners.
Okay, thank you. Any other comments?
No.
No. Thank you very much. With that, we'll close the public hearing on SB 80. Colleagues, that completes the agenda for today. There is no meeting on Thursday. And so next Tuesday, we'll start to have some of our first work sessions after the chair and I go down through the list of the various items we have. So I'd expect a very, very busy next Tuesday. With that, colleagues, we're done for the day. Next Tuesday. With that, colleagues, we're done for the day.